My name is Anthony Ponce, and I used to be a reporter on NBC, but I got tired of being part of traditional news media, so I quit that job and became a Lyft driver. And now I interview whatever passengers end up in my backseat. So if you want to hear the best stories that real people tell me when we're driving around the city, check out my podcast. It's called Backseat Rider on podcastone.com, the Podcast One app, and
iTunes. Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with some bonus coverage here of the Survivor Millennials versus Gen X, and wanted to get this guy here back with us on the podcast to talk about Survivor, and then we'll get into a bunch of other stuff down the road that we want to talk about. So here he is, the creator of MetsBlog.com and a true pioneer in the field of sports blogging, Matt Cerrone. Matt, welcome back.
Thank you, Rob. It's awesome to be back. I've told you a million times I love the show, but I gotta tell you, my bones are in baseball, it's in Mets and all that stuff, but like, I get a real rush when, you know, I start to kind of, you know, have interactions on Twitter with some of your guests, like Wiggler and these guys. Like, that's fun for me. That's awesome. I've told you a million times what this podcast does for me in terms of my, media consumption and whatnot. And so I think it's great, and I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, Matt, I can't get over how much you are seemingly into Survivor every season. It's like, you know, I know you're, you know, living and dying with the Mets all year round. And then I just think it's so wild that you really get so into the Survivor every season.
Well, I've said it, you know, it's funny. I've said it to you a million times, and I say it to people out here, and like, they look at me like I have three heads, which is, I mean, Survivor to me is like my favorite sport. And I know that I blog about baseball and I watch baseball, and I'm unfortunately a Jets fan like you are. It's the worst.
Sorry.
And if the Jets are in the Super Bowl, the Mets are in the World Series, I'd obviously be watching. But like, if they're not, I would probably watch the Survivor finale before I watch the Super Bowl or the World Series, because I just like the gameplay. And I like social strategy and all that kind of stuff. And like, that's, it just, you know, and we've talked before, like, I see, at least to me, a lot of parallels between the way we watch and the way we talk about, frankly, Survivor and sports. And it's funny, cause like, I hear a lot of the regular guests you have on, and they kind of, not that they mock you, that's not the right word, but they kind of, they appease you when you dip into talking about the Mets. There's been a lot of that this season, obviously, with David Wright on Survivor and then the Mets, David Wright. And there's always a sort of like, well, okay, you know, they claim to not be, you know, sports fans. But the reality is, like, there's a lot of parallels, frankly, with the way the strategy in a lot of the games and, you know, the way we cover it, and the way we talk about it. And so for me, as a consumer and a viewer and a listener, it's very much similar. And so, like, you know, to me, it's a sport.
More likely to play again in 2017, David Wright, the Survivor, or David Wright, the Met?
In 2017, I would say David Wright, the player, but how many games are we talking? Yeah. I mean, that's a different story.
David Wright, the baseball player, or David Wright, the Survivor player?
It's funny. I've actually texted David Wright, the baseball player, and he does not watch Survivor at all. And I was like, oh, that's a shame. Like, this guy's playing, he's got your name, like, you know, blah, 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 but he doesn't.
He was not aware of it.
Nah, he doesn't care.
Could not care less. Okay, so you've heard all the things that I've been saying about this season and how, you know, I've really enjoyed this game, especially since the swap and the merge. So what are your thoughts at where the game stands right now? Do you have any sort of particular insight into things as they are?
Well, I feel like the characters are among the best we've seen in a long time as far as like an overall cast. Like, every character is pretty good, if not awesome. They're compelling. They're really smart in terms of their storytelling. Like, David, I was convinced early in the year that this was all just a charade, that like, as a TV writer, that he was essentially writing his story in the show the way he would like a character in a television series. Cause like, it was that calculated and smart. I mean, obviously now we've seen that that's more authentic and raw, but that just goes to show how deep the storytelling is and the characters are. I think they've been terrific. My concern with the show is, it's funny, the characters are awesome. The show has been insanely entertaining. I'm blown away by how self-aware most of the players are. Like, it's pretty remarkable how aware of their own game they are and how aware of the show they are. And it's all very out in front. But they're also incredibly sloppy players. They're playing really fast and they're just in their own heads. But like, they're making a lot of weird mistakes. They're doing a lot of strange things. They're playing idols in weird spots. Like, there's just a lot of like I said, loose and fast, kind of sloppy play that's been going on, that in some ways it would be great if they were like really sharp, but I'll take the characters. I'll take the story, because, you know, that's what makes it entertaining. And the other stuff actually gives us more to talk about. So it actually kind of works out on both ends.
When you talk about how meta the players are and how armed they are with information, but at the same time, sloppy. I mean, do you think those two things are connected? And I'm trying to come up with what the baseball analogy is, where, you know, you have these guys who are able to, they're looking at their swing between every at bat, and maybe they might be, you know, given like their batting average against like a certain pitcher in a certain spot, but that it's the fundamentals are breaking down.
To go along those parallels, I mean, I just think that maybe they're in their own heads a little bit too much. You know, it could be overthinking, could be overplaying, because they're so aware of the, you know, the fact that they, and I can't remember who you had on a couple of weeks ago, but they were taking issue with the fact that they were referring in the game to, you know, I don't want to be a goat.
And probably selfie.
They're using terminology that we would use out here, and they're using it in the game, and it kind of takes away. But to me, that just suggests that they're just incredibly aware of this kind of conversation, like that you guys have on know-it-alls. Like that's, I suspect, in their heads when they're playing. And that could be the younger, you know, maybe it's the millennials. It's a younger group. So maybe they're, you know, more aware of this stuff. They've been raised. They've been watching Survivor since this kind of conversation's been going on. I mean, when we started watching it, obviously that wasn't the case. You know, I don't know if it's that, but like they're just very aware of not just the game they're playing, but how it's being perceived and how they're being perceived. And they talk about it, which is pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
So it could just be that they're so aware of the whole situation. They're in their own heads. I think sometimes that might manifest itself in doing things that maybe were a little bit overt. And, you know, like Will the other night, you know, this whole thing about his resume, like that's, you know, who talked that way 20 seasons ago? Nobody. But like, it's just the fact that he's aware of that, and he's 18, and that's like, he's very mindful of that. And all the people sitting next to him are like, oh, of course you want to do that. Like, it's not even like that's a crazy idea. It's just understood. So, you know, so you're making moves to do that. Like, you're making moves to be perceived a certain way and perceive the way we would perceive them. And I don't know that that's necessarily the smartest way to win the game. It speaks to the last few winners, actually, who really were not that way. They were far more of a rock, more comforting, just likable people. And so it makes you think, well, I wonder if this is the style of play that's really smart. Like, maybe if you want to win the $1 million, maybe not being entertaining, but being secure and comforting is the way to go. I don't know. It changes all the time.
Well, let's touch on that, because in sort of emailing before we got to this point where we're recording the show, that you were talking about how that you see a little bit of a parallel between the way that sort of general managers are exploiting market inefficiencies in a Moneyball type of way. And you feel like that you see parallels in Survivor.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I haven't thought this completely through, so like I would challenge people to do that as well. But, you know, for people who are unaware, you know, Moneyball, it doesn't just have to be a baseball thing. It's a business thing. It's a way to look at anything, frankly. In baseball, it's when a team uses evidence-based analysis. So, you know, something a front office can prove is happening, and they use it to identify, like I said, inefficiencies in the market. So, you know, they're basically things that are happening a lot and is easy to do or replicate, that kind of contradict what most teams are doing or what most players in Survivor are doing in that context. So it basically contradicts the common strategy of the game. And then they use that to exploit that inefficiency to their advantage. So like in baseball, the common one is on base percentage. Everybody thinks Moneyball is on base percentage, but it's not. It's just that that's what it got to be known for. And so like in the late 90s, early 2000s, power, home run hitters, that was what everybody wanted. But the Oakland A's, who didn't have a lot of money, realized that teams that had players that get on base score the most runs, and nobody was paying for that. So they exploited that by acquiring those players, and then they ended up scoring the most runs while everybody else was overpaying for power. Mm-hmm. So they used that inefficiency and that thing that wasn't being utilized to their strength because it exploited these weaknesses. And so like in Survivor, I think of like Tony, who, not surprisingly, is my favorite player of all time. No offense, Rob.
None taken. I'm Team TV.
Yeah, he's awesome. So, but, you know, Tony came along at a time when everyone in the game started playing like Russell, you know, and Boston Rob. And, you know, they were known for their manipulation and scheming and the way they kind of brainwashed people into going their way. And Tony I feel like, exploited people's need for control and for comfort. And I think what's genius is he did it by creating chaos and unpredictability, you know, with his spy shacks and his bag of tricks and flip-flopping, whatever. But the best part is that he'd create the instability and then he'd provide the solution and the comfort, which inherently made him valuable. So, I mean, it's great. Like, he was the Rock. And it's funny because, like, Cass is known that season. She got branded for, you know, for chaos. But the difference is that, like, while Cass would sort of stir the pot and walk away from it and, you know, try to see what would happen, Tony would break the pot and then glue it back together and then get patted on the back for fixing the pot. So, like, that's, you know, and so he identified something that was being undervalued, which was security and competence. And he used that basically to his advantage. Like, he provided that, even though he was actually creating the chaos. So to me, that's brilliant. Like, he, in some ways, he created the inefficiency and then filled it.
Well, let me just talk this through with you, because that I feel like that this is definitely something interesting. And I think that, you know, we've definitely, you know, gotten into this a little bit, but not in these exact terms. So the part that I want to ask you about is that, you know, following the, you know, Robin Russell era of Survivor, that people wanted to, you know, feel like they were making, you know, sort of like aggressive moves, and Tony capitalized on the way that people were playing that game. But I know that, you know, we have certainly Chaos Cass, but I'm trying to think if that's what was the key for Tony's success in terms of people wanting to work with him at different times.
Well, I think he helped manipulate the situation. I think that, to me, is what makes him unique, in the sense that I think he, my guess is he knew that I can be the solver. I can be the person that fixes everybody's problems. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially what he did. Like, he would step in and, you know, he would sort of be the glue.
Yeah.
And the problem is that he often caused the problem in the first place.
Yes.
But to me, that's sort of the evil genius. And you don't see that very often. The fact that he was able to pull that off repeatedly is actually, you know, staggering. A better example is probably, like, you know, a more contrarian thing would be like Tom Westman, mm-hmm. who, you know, the game was set in motion by Richard Hatch, and it's alliances and backstabbing and all these things. And then Tom comes on. He's the steady guy, mm-hmm. you know,
sure.
He comes to you know, people are undervaluing and unknowingly needing integrity. And, like, here he is, you know, and he kind of fills that void and uses that to his advantage. That pendulum goes back and forth between, you know, the confident, calm, sort of steady force versus the scrambling strategist, you know, mad scientist, as they would say in the archetypes, you know, that sort of thing. So it's really just a matter of that. But the smarts is identifying when that's appropriate and when it's not.
That's interesting. Just going back all the way to the beginning, certainly you had that with Richard Hatch, and then Tina Wesson was a little bit of, like, the antithesis of Richard Hatch in the way that she approached things. I like where this is all going, and that the only problem is that I feel like that in Survivor, I wondered, does it happen organically, or does it happen as sort of like in Moneyball, you have Billy Beane talking about, like, he's going to really, like, him and Paul D. Podesta, and they're going to look at the numbers and say, oh, here's what we should do. And the only problem with it from a Survivor perspective is that you can't really say that Tony, in all his infinite wisdom and greatness, like, drew the plan up this way. So maybe it worked, but it wasn't necessarily by design, where somebody like Tony comes in and is going to approach the game one way, and that, you know, following the, you know, the Tony era, somebody like Jeremy is going to come in and design a game plan that's going to be the opposite of that.
Yeah, well, it could simply just be adaptability,
right?
And being able to recognize that in the moment, it could be some combination of self-awareness, being able to step out of yourself, being able to adapt, and all those things. I mean, that may be ultimately where the evidence comes from, because you're right. I think there's probably a way, I don't know if you can quantify it, and that's why I'm reluctant to kind of, the Moneyball thing is more of a terminology. I maybe the edgy people can argue that maybe there is data that could suggest it. I don't know. But, like, my guess is the people that are playing it, it's, I think there's sort of a momentum and a style that is clearly popular because you're watching the show. Now, of course, they go out and they tape it before certain seasons air, but for the most part, they're aware of it. And, you know, so that may be on their mind, and it may be the type of thing when you're in the moment, and this is something you could clearly ask, you know, are they aware of that? Are they sensing that? And my guess is people that might answer that as if they did recognize it, probably the people that finished pretty well, and the people that didn't are not.
So I would say that, you know, it's not necessarily by design of the person that ends up benefiting from it, but I think it's more that it is the reaction of the other players. And I think that people are probably just more fearful of what they just saw work. So in a era where, you know, everybody is sort of afraid of, okay, I don't want to be, you know, taken advantage of by the big move. And here's Tony, he's going to help me do stuff. And again, I'm not necessarily sure if that's exactly the secret to Tony's success, but I think that what where we see, you know, somebody like a Jeremy or even a Michelle come along and have success because you don't feel like they're the Tony. So it's like the, you know, I'm afraid of the person who's going to do the Tony to me. So I'm going to gravitate to the person that's not the Tony.
Right. Well, like Russell comes on the heels of who won before, like JT and Bob Crowley, right? And Parvati and Earl, like they were all, you know, for the most part, you know, very nice, comforting kind of people. And then along comes Russell, who was actually trying to be that person, right? He was pretending to be the Louisiana country boy and, you know, the big smile and the hat and the whole, but meanwhile, like to the camera, he's, you know, clearly not that. And he's conniving and he's manipulating these people and he's pushing them around and he's doing all these things, but he was playing that part, you know? So I think like he kind of, and what's interesting in that season is as it goes along and it becomes known that he's sort of, you know, running thing, people gravitate toward it. They become fearful that he's going to, you know, if I turn on Russell, he's going to vote me out. Like it almost it works in his favor. Like he exploits that and builds on it.
And he was able to do it twice, really.
Yeah, because then when he comes back, obviously no one knew who he was.
Right.
So like, that's, you know, so it lets him replicate that. That's obviously rare, never gets to happen anyway. But so it's just, again, it's just, you know, and I don't know, maybe that's just who he is and it just happened. But like, it just seems very interesting that you've got a series of winners that are sort of once, and it's an evolution and it evolves and they kind of fall into a pattern. And then along comes someone who completely tips over the apple cart and capitalizes on it. And it's usually for a specific counter reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It seems like to me.
So with that in mind, so who do you think is most likely to benefit from that this season, where the last season that these players saw is Jeremy? Do you think that people are sort of concerned of who is the person who's going to be the Jeremy, or do you think that the still like Tony is very much in the minds of these players? Has it swung back?
Yeah. I don't know, but it seems like just based on the last few votes that they are, and again, you know, the self-awareness like we were talking about and the awareness of the game, they do seem to be very aware of the gameplay, the resume and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I don't know if that's what they're saying, what they're doing, maybe something completely different. So, you know, Zeke came across, I mean, initially, like he looked like the guy that was just getting along with everybody and he was just very affable and nice. But then they started talking about him as the general and he started talking about him that way. And, you know, the Civil War and all that. So like clearly they were showing us one thing, but in reality, clearly they were aware of his gameplay. And then he gets voted home.
Yeah.
Ken seems to be the guy, and we texted about it a little bit, like he's the guy that makes everybody feel good about themselves. So like if that's the trend and the Jeremy Michelle trend continues, right? Like he's the guy that is clearly having that effect on people, as odd as some of the things he says may be. And, you know, his conversation with Will the other night was a little bizarre, but like at the end of the day, he gets a pat. I think it was you guys were talking about like the Mad Men compare, or the John Hamm comparison to the handsome guy bubble.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
It's just whatever it is. Like he makes people feel good about themselves. And like, they kind of go along with whatever he's saying. I don't know if it's his eyes or whatever's happening, but like if that's what's being valued, then maybe that'll work. But what I'm saying is at some point, whether it's next season of the year, someone's going to manipulate that. They're going to present that way and then play to the inefficiency. They're going to play to the thing that is the weakness and use it as a strength. I don't think it doesn't look to me like it's happening this season, but it's probably a couple seasons later.
I do think that the problem is I don't know necessarily if people are capable of changing up what their game is to the point where they can take advantage of the inefficiency. So it's sort of like, oh, okay, I know that, you know, as a running, like, you know, really, you know, fast running backs are doing better than, you know, sort of like power backs. So I'll change my running style. I think you sort of just like have to be the type of player that you are and hope that the dynamic, like you can control some of the things you do, but I think that as from a big picture, people are who they are. And I think that Survivor often exposes that. What do you think of that?
No, I think that's true. I don't think you can look at it as a GM front office comparison because it's just, it's not that. Mm-hmm. I just think the net result and the action is essentially the same. Mm-hmm. Why that's happening and the preparedness is clearly not the same because it's not like Russ. I mean, of all people, it's not like Russell's in the back looking at, you know, data printouts of everybody's personality. Like, you know, so like, obviously that can't be happening.
It all makes sense now. This is my master plan. Yes.
But I think it's more in the moment where it's probably an extension of who that person is and how they probably operate in their real life and being able to capitalize on that situation and recognize that weakness and being able to jump on it. And it's probably very organic and it just kind of happens. I don't doubt the fact that they're obviously fans of the show and they're watching the show. So, you know, you get into a current of what you're seeing. And so maybe then when you're out there and you're not seeing that or you recognize that you have leverage in a certain moment, you can take advantage of it if you're that personality type. If you're not, you're not going to do it.
Now, I'm sure you've thought this through to some degree. So there's 8 people left. How do you think that this season ultimately plays out?
Well, you know how this goes. There's always the what do you want and what do you think?
Okay.
You know,
what do you want? So what do you want to happen?
I really want David to win.
Okay.
And I can't tell, like, I don't know if it's because of David Wright, the baseball player, and like maybe that's somehow weighing on my mind or something. I don't know. I like his vulnerability. I like the way he sort of thinks through these things and talks it out to the camera. I always appreciate that as a viewer. And I think he's honest and I don't know. I like him. It's just that simple. I also really like Jay. And mm-hmm. I think in terms of how it shakes, I feel like Jay's actually in maybe the best position, because he has an idol, but he's also really good in challenges for some reason that does not get talked about. He's not as good as Ozzy, but I mean, he's pretty good. I mean, he does some pretty amazing things. He's always, ahead in a lot of these things. Like he's just really adept. Those two things in and of itself, he's also managed to kind of fly under the radar a little bit. He's got a resume going. I don't know that it's so great, but he's made some moves. He's done some things. I just feel like he's in a nice spot. And I think people, it looks like the way they talk about him, especially in a lot of the secret scene stuff. And it just seems like people have a pretty good view of him. So like, I feel like he's in probably, you know, if you were to put a number on all these different things in terms of a value, like I feel like he kind of nets out the best.
Jay does. Jay.
But I'm rooting for David.
Okay.
You know, so that's kind of my push and pull.
See, I would feel like Jay is a long shot. So give me the scenario where you feel like that Jay makes it to the end.
You mean, who's he with?
Yeah. How does he pull it off from 8?
I think I think he wins immunities. Mm-hmm. Right? He's got his idol that he can play. His bond with Adam is unique in that, I don't know, there seems to be a weird respect between the two of them. It's not like they're honest about the fact, they're honest about where they are with one another, which I like because you don't get that a lot. And so I think that's an ally. And I think Adam's in a good position to kind of carry along, maybe throw, you know, if they can sort of find a bond together, which I think they have, and they can continue to play that out, I feel like that's an inroad for him. And so when you kind of whittle it down, it reminds me of the kind of, you know, it's funny, it's not too dissimilar to the election. It's like, what's the least best? Because that ultimately is, I think, what this always comes down to is like, what's the least best option?
Mm-hmm.
And he just strikes me as a person that kind of touches on all these things and comes across that way.
Yeah.
I think from a jury perspective, he can sort of argue why he got there, things that he did to get there. He just seems like a nice, it reminds me of Michelle. It's like, you know, he didn't do too much. He didn't do too little. He just sort of is in the right place, right time. And I have a feeling in a season like this where, like I said, everybody's just in their heads that maybe that comes out ahead.
I think that for Jay, the problem is getting to the end. I agree. I think he would actually be pretty strong in the final 3. I think he could give a pretty impassioned speech. And I think that people generally like him as opposed to Taylor, who I think that he really got on their nerves. But it's still, he's got probably now, you know, 4 or 5 votes that he needs to get through. And he has the hidden immunity. I mean, it might take like a Mike Holloway-esque run for Jay.
I think when it gets down to like 6, 5, he's going to have to turn on his afterburners a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think he can, based on the competition. You know, if Chris was still in the game, that would be, you know, he was terrific in challenges. But I think he's got the edge on a lot of them in those things. Plus, he's got the vote steal, the advantage, which obviously the only way that that has any value is when if you can steal an advantage in a challenge at the end, mm-hmm. which in my guess is what this is all boiling down to. You know, I just think he's in a good position that way. Obviously, it takes a certain amount of luck. But I think he can put himself in that position to capitalize on the luck because he has the idol, because he's athletic enough to kind of get through these challenges, because he's likable enough. And I think it seems like he knows when to kind of fly under the radar and then when to sort of step up and speak. And when he does, he's kind of funny and affable about it. Mm-hmm. So there is that likability to him. I just think he kind of, I think I'm taking the safe route because I think he touches on enough, like I said, touches on enough things that I think he could do it. I don't know that I would bet on him, but like he just feels like the safest bet to me.
I mean, I think that Jay, even though he voted out Michaela, it seemed like that people he was going to take a real heel turn at that point. But, you know, he still has plenty of support, I think, from the fans. He's very hard to stay mad at him.
Yeah. He's funny.
Yeah.
Too.
He's funny.
And I got to think he's funny when he's out there, too, with them. Like they don't really show that very much, but it's hard to imagine that, you know, the way he speaks and the things he's saying to the camera, it's hard to think that he's not having that same personality, you know, on the island.
So we have this legacy advantage. We have this reward steal advantage. Do you like that Survivor is putting all of these other little twists in the game from a gameplay perspective? Or, you know, as somebody who follows baseball so closely, are you a purist of the game?
I like them when they're, first of all, I don't like when there's a ton of them, mm-hmm. right? When there's a ton of things in play at the same time, I'm not a particularly big fan of, but like on their own, I actually think they're kind of cool. I like the legacy one. I like the fact that when you get to the jury phase, as long as that legacy is protected within the jury and the contestant, you know, the players, I like the fact that there's sort of this vested interest in what's going on. Like that's pretty powerful. Like right now, Jessica, you know, has a vested interest in some way, shape or form in Ken winning mm-hmm. because she's, you know, imparted this on him. So like that's more than just a relationship. Like she actually has like a physical, tangible piece of her legacy in the game. So I kind of like that component. I think that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Obviously I think we all agree that the reward steal thing is kind of confusing, but at the same time, like you said, like it's thrown a kink into the flow of the game, which they've now had to work around. So like in and of itself, that's actually kind of interesting. Like it's not overt, but it's there and it's something that has to be addressed. So like, I don't mind that either. It's when there's, you know, it's when there's three idols in the game and this thing and that thing and swaps and that and now it's, to me, that's when it's sort of changing the dynamics of the chessboard.
So that was a really interesting point that you made about Jessica having an interest in Ken winning based on that her passing along the legacy advantage. Obviously, she's just like passing her baton and then some part of her is still alive in Ken. The only thing that I don't like about it, and this sort of adds to that for me, is that the other players don't even know that it's a thing. So you have this sort of situation where you have either like incomplete information for all the players, where I think I might have liked this more if we would have had on day one, Jeff say to the players, hey, this season we're doing something new. There's this thing, it's called the legacy advantage. Somebody is going to have it. And on day 36, and there would be some sort of like, do you have the legacy advantage? Do you have the legacy advantage? If we found out that Jessica has the legacy advantage, who did she pass it to? Who did she want? And now there's like some heat on Ken because he has it. Oh, he was her friend. Did he have it? Does David have it? I think that that would create some more drama.
Yeah, that's interesting. That would be fine. I like the fact, though, that they're not aware, because I think what would be interesting is actually split the difference, which is that it's out there, but you don't know who has it. Mm-hmm. Right. So like Jeff makes that announcement.
Yeah, we don't know. It's a mystery it, right? The whole okay. season. Yeah.
So from that point forward, it's, well, obviously there's nine people left, so somebody must have it. Oh, there's six people left. Well, somebody must have it. There's three people left. Well, somebody, you know, so like that I could get on board with. That I think is actually kind of cool. I don't think knowing who has it would make it, that would be completely, that would make it useless to a certain extent. But Yeah, the kind of mystery of it would be a nice little twist.
Yeah, I think that would be a fun way to handle it. At least in the future, people will know it exists. Or maybe in the future, people know that there are these little things and these little powers that people could have.
What I do like, and this is not traditionalist, what I do like is that they have been changing it. Right. So like we had the votes deal and then there was this, you know, so like every season they seem to be kind of switching it up. The idols are in the challenges. The idols are in a tree and you need a key to get them out. You know, I like them keeping them on their toes a little bit. I think as a viewer, sometimes there's a little bit spent too much on wandering the woods looking for idols and stuff. That's probably not all that compelling. But, you know, the idea that you can't go into the season with any sort of, you know, there's certain things you can predict. And there's a lot that you can't. And I think that keeps them on them, keeps everybody on their toes. I think that's, at least from a viewer perspective, I think is kind of fun. And, you know, it's not replicated. It doesn't get stale.
Yeah. The challenge every season for the producers of the show
is, you can't do that.
Right. How do you change the game enough to keep it fresh, but not change it to the point where it's unrecognizable?
Well, it's right. It's not like they're sending half the contestants to Alaska. You know, I mean, like it's, they're keeping it within the confines of the game. They're just changing the, you know, the wrapping.
Yeah.
Which I think is good.
One of the things that you had also mentioned to me that you wanted to talk about is sort of the similarities between covering a sport like baseball in the way that you do it. And then the way that reality TV gets covered.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that to me is, I think what I appreciate most about what you do, like it's interesting. Like I listen to pretty much everything you do and it's always fascinating to me that like, it's very much the same, like it's the same post game wrap up analogy, right? Like you use it in the names of the shows. So that whole idea is something that you can't necessarily bring to news or even entertainment. Like there's something about the way you talk about the game and the way we on the baseball side or football where talk about the game, it's very similar.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of X's and O's breakdown. There's highlights. We're looking at plays. We're looking at things that occurred. You know, what would have happened if this happened versus that? You can play out the lineage. Mm-hmm. All that kind of stuff is exactly, you know, I mean, that's what I make my living doing on Mets Blog. It's, you know, the Mets are thinking about doing this. What if they did that? Maybe they should have done this. If the ball had been hit here, they should have put the infielders there. Like, I don't think people who watch Survivor, for the most part, if they're not baseball fans, understand how much, you know, strategy there is in baseball. Like, that's very much what the game is about. It's about putting your, you know, mind in the other person and trying to, where are they going to be? Where are they going to position themselves? Where does he think this pitch is going to be? I should throw it there versus here. Like, there's a lot of that kind of psychological strategy so much so that they're actually employing now team psychologists and people to be in the dugout with these guys to kind of help them, you know, understand those things. It, you know, it's very similar. It's not that far off.
You know, but one of the things that are different, and I would love to hear you talk about this a little bit, is just the idea of the way that we cover Survivor. And certainly we have our favorites and sometimes we're all on the same page. And other times it's a little bit more split in the community, but on the, you know, the front of covering a team on a, in a blogging situation, for the most part, you know, you have like, okay, now we lost, we're as a community, we're all dealing with this loss, or we won, we're all dealing with a win. How do you deal with sort of like the highs and lows? Like we might have, oh, this is a boring episode, but for the most part, you know, we're sort of covering it from hopefully more of a neutral position.
Okay. So The way I would compare that would be, as Survivor fans, we all want a fun, entertaining season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that to me is the same thing as all Mets fans wanting the team to win. Like you want the team to be, you want the season to be fun and successful and entertaining, and that's what we want. Now there are elements of it that we're going to disagree about, right? This guy should have done that. They should have signed this player. Why didn't this? Blah, blah, blah. Like, please, if I can't even, I mean, well, actually I can, you can totally understand there's times where I think I'm the GM of the Mets because the criticism I get for the things they do is completely ridiculous, but that's the passion and the minutia that gets kind of split apart. But at the end of the day, we all kind of want to have a good experience. And, you know, that experience might be watching 25 other guys win a championship versus one person win $1 million. But like we all kind of want you know, to have a good time. We want to enjoy the show. And, you know, for me, and this may be just unique to me, I have no idea, but like I view baseball very much, you know, as a season, as a show. Like it's, there's a beginning, middle, and end. There's a story to this. You know, it's yeah, maybe there's a 20-year story to this. Maybe there's a 10-year story. Mm-hmm. There's also a 1-year story. And that's the way I look at it. And so, you know, if the movie, if the show stinks midway through, people tune out.
Yeah.
You know what happens. And so like, that's kind of the proper context. People don't want to do that because they feel this larger emotional connection to sports for whatever reason. But the reality is that you are not on the field. You're watching this and it's supposed to be fun and entertaining. And I'm watching Survivor. And it's supposed to be fun and entertaining. So like that to me is the parallel. The minutia, which you do very well discussing and which I do very well discussing in baseball, to me is the parallel as well.
And you're right. You make a great point about how I don't get blamed as much when a Survivor season is bad.
Yeah. That's probably true. I mean, it's like I told you, like I seriously think people think I make the trades or put the, I decide whether the guy's going to hit and run or swing at a pitch. Like I'm just home watching it on the couch. Like you are. I don't know what people think I'm doing, but that's the approach.
Right. Were you happy when the Mets re-signed Cespedes just so that you could sort of put an end for the time of the Mets are so cheap stuff that you tend to hear?
Well, it's funny. You probably can understand this. You've been doing this for a long time. So I think you understand the difference between sort of where your fanship and where your career and your business kind of intersect. It's an interesting Venn diagram. So, there's a part of me that, absolutely. As a fan, I'm thrilled that they signed him and it's done. At the same time, as a person who covers the team and writes about it and, you know, lives and dies on traffic to the site and all those kind of things, it's kind of nice when that's dragging on because people are more tuned in and panicky and it creates a different sort of dynamic.
Right. Like that time I went to Mets blog every 5 seconds for like 3 months waiting for the Mets to trade for Johan Santana.
Exactly. You know, once that happens. Yeah. Okay. Now what? You know. So, but that's the beauty of baseball, but specifically the Mets. If people aren't aware, they're very much known for. I'm actually funny. I'm writing a book about them, and one of the chapters is about the dramas in you know you have to understand and know all the pain that goes with being a Mets fan, and as I'm writing it out. I had to cut stuff because there's so many things that, you know, and like, so there's never a shortage of, all right, well, that's nice. But this, you know, this is now the thing we're going to complain about. And that's okay. I mean, that's part of what sports is about. And that's totally fine if I can sort of be the touch point for that. But to answer your question, yeah, I mean, it's great when something happens as a fan. It's like, oh, that's awesome. I'm thrilled. At the same time, you know, now what am I going to write about? What are people going to complain about?
Right. And I think that just between being a sports fan and being a Survivor fan, is probably, I'd say, closer to being a wrestling fan where it's like, okay, your favorites might not win all the time, but you're not going to go a decade drought of, you know, somebody that you really like winning. Like eventually, like you're going to get to have some winners more along the way.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm not a wrestling fan, so it's hard for me to say. But yeah, I mean, I understand that. Look, they're not direct parallels, but it's. And my point to you, actually, Alina, was more about the plumbing and more about the structure of the coverage and the way it's talked about, which is always rather fascinating to me. Like I you use different terminology, use different words, but the way you're discussing. What happened in the show is very, I mean, it is almost exactly the same as the way we're talking about the game, you know, after the game occurs. Like it's that same passion, that same dissection, the same interest in the maneuvering and in how things played out and all that stuff. And it's just always interesting to me to hear it as someone who creates on one side, but consumes on the other to kind of hear the parallels.
Well, let me ask you some of these questions that I have from the listeners of the podcast. This is a question from Edward Morris, Edmo, big Mets fan, has a lot of questions. He asked, the Mets finally retired number 31 for Mike Piazza this year. Is there anything about Survivor that you would like to see them also retire?
Oof. Wait, you mean honor or
no? It doesn't necessarily need to be that they honor it. I think it's just like, okay, let's put this out to mothballs.
Yeah, you know, listen, I'm going to speak for my wife on this. Jeff has got to freshen up some of the language. Some of the terms that he uses.
Like what?
You know, I'm going to go tally the votes. When you're actually going to go get the votes and then you're going to count them. Like that, she picks on that. That she actually notices that stuff. So if for no other reason, I'm just tired of hearing her talk about it. So like, I would like to see him kind of, you know, I want to know what you're playing for. Like all those things are fun.
No, people but like that stuff.
I know they do. I'm just telling you, listen, I'm speaking from a, and you can understand this. from a hearing my wife talk about it point of view.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's understandable. That's
aside from that, in terms of honoring people, I actually think it would be kind of cool for them to have like a Hall of Fame kind of a thing.
Well,
like,
they do have the Survivor Hall of Fame run by Gordon Holmes.
Right. But I mean, if I'd like to see Jeff be part of it and something a little bit more formal of it. I you know, because they're at a point now where there's been so many players and so much. And I don't know how they would quantify it or how they would do it. It's so subjective, but you know, I think that would be kind of fun to actually have, you know, players. I think an idea that I had mentioned to you once before is I think a good idea for a season would just be sort of, you know, we had Second Chance. I'd like to see Final Chance where this is it.
Retirement
never
match.
You're never coming back. Like that's enough already. This is your one shot and you're done.
Interesting.
You know, there's certain like legacy hair, you know, things as part of their history that, and I realize they want to get new blood in and they want to get new players in and all that's important, but there is sort of hair, you know, legacy elements and things part of the Survivor culture that I think fans enjoy. And with, you know, people listen to the podcast and all these things and it's terrific, but when the show does it, it sort of adds this sort of extra kind of heft to it. And I think it would be kind of fun to see it sort of immortalized in that way.
Yeah. I mean, you get voted out of Final Chances. That's it. You're done.
Sorry, Eliza. Oh, sorry.
Don't let her hear you say that. Very interesting. I like that. So then this is a question for you from Patrick Lair, who wants to say, with Jeff Kent doing pretty well during Philippines, what other former or current Met would you like to see go on Survivor?
Ooh, R.A. Dickey.
Yeah, I think that's the answer. He would be really good.
Actually, I said this to you once before, and I've actually mentioned it to him, which is Bobby Valentine.
Oh, yeah. That's a great one.
Because if anybody ever in the history of, at least as managers go, practice social politics and, you know, manipulating and maneuvering people, like he did. Like he, and I've talked to him many times about, you know, how you sort of, you know, curry favor with these players in the locker room versus these, and you need to gain support here and you have to have the media be there and say these things. And he was very aware of how he was presenting himself and how he was sort of manipulating the room. I mean, what else do you want? You know, like that's it. Like that would be great to see him in that environment. He would never do it. He doesn't do anything, I think, that he doesn't know definitively he's the best at.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he would be awesome. As far as players, yeah, R.A. Dickey would be terrific.
Just to stop down on Bobby Valentine, that I think that this is the wrong era for Bobby Valentine to play Survivor, because I think in the post-Tony era, the top step Bobby stuff's not going to play.
You're absolutely
Terry
right.
Terry Collins would win.
Yeah. Bobby missed a boat. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, as far as players go, yeah, I think if people don't know who R.A. Dickey is, he's very philosophical, very smart, very aware, very self-aware. If might be his biggest trait, you know, a little rough, a little bristly, but, you know, also very sweet at times. And I think he would probably fit in and be able to kind of play the social game pretty well.
Yeah. And I hate that he's on the Braves with Bartolo Colon.
Oh, please.
I hate it.
I know.
I hate it. Tom Tamillo wants to ask, what skills do you think you need to have in order to grow and manage a successful sports blog? And are those skills applicable to finding success on Survivor?
Yeah, actually, I do. I think it's know your audience, right? Know the people know how you're being perceived and know how you're sort of communicating with those people and your value and what you're bringing to the table and how they, you know, so for instance, on Mets blog, you know, through 12, 13 years of doing this, things have changed, right? Different players come on board, different go away. There's other blogs, there's other players, there's other mediums, there's other platforms. All these things are constantly changing. And you need to sort of understand what the audience wants. How are they viewing me? What do they see as me, seeing me in terms of value? What can I provide? What can I be for them? All those kind of things. And it's that adaptability and being able to make that adjustment, and not convincing yourself that you're one way when the market or the audience or your competitors or whatever it is view you something else. And being able to kind of make those adjustments very quickly, and do it well. And so, yeah, I mean, in some ways, I think that does actually translate very much to Survivor. On the other hand, I have asthma and two knee surgeries, and I'm colorblind, so I probably am not going on the, you know, petition to be on the show anytime soon. But I do think those are qualities that actually probably play well in that environment.
Yeah, I wonder what that would look like to have sort of a, you know, a sports reporter or some sort of a sports blogger. I don't know who the closest we've had to that has been.
Nobody really. I mean, yeah, it's interesting. I don't. Well, first of all, we work summers, so probably no one. But I don't know. That's a good question. But it's actually, you know, when I think
Danny
about
Boatwright, maybe. I mean, I feel like that she was some sort of a like commentator on the Chiefs, but I don't know if necessarily she was
But it's interesting because those guys,
I think, and she's women, like a talk radio host or something like.
Okay.
That. Yeah.
But the reporters themselves, the beat reporters specifically, like it's a very nuanced political job. I mean, right. It really is. It's like you're going in there and you've got to split the difference between saying things about these people and criticizing them in a way that they're, you know, that you're honest and that your audience kind of appreciates, but also not cross a line where those people and those players won't talk to you again.
Mm-hmm.
So you really need to kind of find that line between doing just enough to, you know, be popular in the clubhouse, but also be popular out on the street. And so there's this sort of in between. And when
it's
you think about
line.
Yeah, when you think about Survivor and you think about the end game, right? You're trying to do just enough. You're trying to vote out all these people and cross them, but not enough that they won't give you $1 million. Like, and so there is that, you know, maybe that line is something that they should explore as far as like contestants. That'd be interesting.
Okay.
I'll send Adam Rubin on. He's the Mets beat writer. I think he would be great.
He's such a troll, Adam Rubin on Twitter.
He would be terrible.
He really is. He just likes to antagonize people.
We go back a long way. I'm not going to bore your audience with it. You and I could talk about it offline.
I think I might be Team Omar on that one.
There you go. My favorite moment. It's actually, again, in the book I'm writing, one of the things is things to know. Actually, in that the pain chapter, I think I referenced that. And that whole event is great. Like, if you're a baseball fan and you don't know about it, like, just search Omar and Ruben and you'll find a terrific 10 minutes of YouTube video. It's great.
Yeah. I was just like glued to my computer that day. Like, wait, what happened? What? Jeff McGinnis wants to know, as a Giants fan, I need to know, could the Mets have stopped the Cubs in the divisional series and spared us the darkest timeline? Boy, the Cubs fans are not going to like that.
No, sorry, Dave. I don't know. I mean, yeah, not this year. They didn't have the horses.
Right.
You know, I love the, and I wrote about this on the site and like, you'll appreciate this. Like, I love the fact that this Mets Cubs, I think it's a rivalry. Like, we're going to find out this year, but you know, the Mets beat the Cubs in the playoffs the year before. And then the Cubs went on to win the World Series this year. And like, they're set up in very polar opposite ways. They rebuilt their franchises at the same time. One does it with offense. One does it with pitching. One's from Chicago. One's from New York. Like, they have this very, you know, they have a nice dynamic going. And like, I hope the next few seasons, like, they're rivals. I think it's going to be actually kind of fun. I like the Mets better because I think pitching wins, but I think it'll be fun.
We'll see. Cubs, you know, they have a hangover after this year. This is maybe the Mets can get into that like every other year thing, and the Cubs can take over the even years from the Giants, and we'll get back on the odd years.
You have to get David Bloomberg and I on. Yeah, the three of us should get together and just, you know, talk Mets Cubs. That's fine.
2-on-1. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Edmo also wanted to ask you a question about how David Wright has the moniker of Captain America from the World Baseball Classic. What moniker would you give the David Wright of Survivor?
Captain Honesty.
Captain Honesty.
Really, I mean, he's really, you know, I think he's, well, it's funny, right? Like, he gets this, maybe honesty is not the right word. I guess, I don't know what the word is. It's, I like the fact that he's vulnerable. that he's willing to talk about. And I appreciate this. I have, you know, anxiety issues and depression, and I take medication and I'm not shy about it. And like, so maybe I respect the fact that he's very open about just sort of how he behaves and how his brain works and how neurotic he is about stuff. Like, I appreciate that. I do it too. I talk about it all the time. It, you know, so like, maybe I just respect that. So like, I don't know, Captain, what do you want to call that? What's the word? What am I looking for?
I'm trying to think of the alliteration.
I see. We need something to begin to.
Yeah. All right. We'll let the commenters think about that. Yeah. But going back to the idea of anxiety playing this game, this has been a very, you know, anxious season between David and Hannah as well. I mean, is that something that you find particularly endearing in the players?
I mean, I do. Well, for me personally, I do, because I know that's how I would be if I was out there. I'd also be wheezing and probably face down in the sand. But I appreciate it because it's, you know, it's not, I don't feel like it's fake, you know, so that's who they are. And I connect with that. I deal with that every day. So, you know, I like to see how they handle it. I think it's in some ways actually kind of useful because, you know, you get to see sort of how they're handling all these things. And I can't even imagine, you know, in terms of your senses and everything else that's going on out there. I mean, it's mind boggling to me how you guys even put yourselves through that, let alone mentally. And so, yeah, you know, I think it is endearing. And Hannah in particular, I mean, she looks like she's going to pass out half the time. It's amazing. I like it. I mean, I know that's probably rubbed some people the wrong way. They probably think it's overblown or, you know, they're just, oh, they're worrying too much or they're overthinking it. But like, that's how some people are, myself included. So like, I don't know, I connect with it. I like it.
And so you've seen how the survivors have been dealing with it. But, you know, how do you handle dealing with any sort of anxiety issues that you have?
Well,
if you don't mind
well,
me asking. Yeah,
no, it's fine. I mean, not well, according to some people. But other, you know, I mean, it's, well, first of all, medication, I think, is important. And just frankly, acknowledging and understanding. And it's funny, Spencer and I have struck up a little bit on email, talking a little bit about his podcast, which is terrific. You know, it's, I think, just understanding what's going on and really trying to understand the chemistry and the psychology of it is really important. The more you understand about how your brain works and why you react to certain things, and I hate to be all Tony Robbins about stuff, but like, you know, it's going really back into your childhood and trying to understand why things make you react a certain way and what flusters you and what doesn't, and just really comprehension and analysis. I mean, to use the term, and understanding that, coming to grips with that, then lets you get your arms around it. If you don't know what the problem is, then you really can't address it. So like, that education and that understanding is probably the most important thing. And then figuring out how to handle it symptomatically, whether it's medication or meditation, which is hugely important. You know, all that kind of stuff, like what works for you. And then, you know, I'm married, my wife and I butt heads on a lot of these things. I overreact. I'm sarcastic. I do things I probably shouldn't say, stuff that I should. I don't realize it. You know, it's working with her to, you know, if there's moments where that's happening, like, let me know. And I have to be mindful of the fact that that's occurring and, you know, take breaths and kind of understand it. And like, it's work. It's not, you know, and to be doing that on an island when you're starving, you know, for 20 days and people, and you don't know who to trust. I can't even imagine how that works. But, and so to answer the previous question, I think there's sort of a respect and a appreciation for kind of what they're doing out front, in front of a camera, in front of other people, you know, dealing with all that, I think is actually wonderful.
And how do you know if you have any sort of issues with anxiety and it's not just like, oh, okay, it's just this thing that I'm dealing with? Like, how do you know how serious an issue is with being anxious?
It's interesting. Anxiety, well, they're different. So the way it was explained to me and the way I understand it is, depression is when you're sort of, when you let the things in your past really kind of dictate how you're feeling. Anxiety is when the things in your future are sort of dictating how you're feeling.
Oh, that's very interesting.
I think it really comes down to that, right? So like, you know, for me, the worst case is when those two things collide, which does happen. And so you know, you feel like you can't control your future because of the mistakes you've made in your past. Like that becomes very heavy and difficult. But the symptoms, you know, anxiety, it's short of breath, it's frantic, it's, you know, not being able to make sense of stuff. Some people get dizzy. There's sort of physical, real world physical manifestations of it. I don't deal with that so much. Depression is more of just a heaviness and an inability to think beyond stuff. Like it's a cloudy weight that makes you feel like, you know, things are just impossible. And, you know, it's that tug between those two things can be very difficult. And like I said, to do that in that environment that these people are doing, I can't even begin to fathom what that would be like.
Well, I know you're doing some stuff to try to help people, especially men who are suffering from those sort of issues. Can you talk a little bit about what sort of things you're doing?
Yeah. A friend of mine from SNY, who, you know, we're both obviously working sports, but, you know, we have an understanding of podcasts and content and all these kind of things. And, you know, we're putting together essentially a series of podcasts that are aimed towards 25 and 40 year old guys who, you know, want to be better at parenting or dating and relationships or fitness or mental health stuff and all these kind of things. You know, the model we're trying to use is sort of that Dr. Drew, Adam Carolla, Loveline kind of thing with a comedian who has experience in these in a particular subject and a, you know, someone up myself when it comes to fatherhood, who's experiencing these subjects. I believe Jim Brewer, hopefully is going to do the fatherhood show with me. And so like he and I will, you know, that will be our subject. And then we'll get other people to do the other ones. We're putting together sponsors and all that kind of stuff. But really the goal for me is to try to create a conversation or give access to a conversation to younger guys that, like, I don't think most men talk about. Like, you know, we don't get granular in those kind of conversations, especially as it pertains to failure. There's a lot of talk about success and what people do well. Not a lot of talk about what we do wrong. And there's a commonality to that. And there's things to be learned from those things. And there's a certain level of wisdom that comes with it. And I think people would benefit from it. And you know, the power of podcasting in your ear is that you get to sort of eavesdrop and be part of this conversation, you know, that maybe you don't typically take part in. And for me, quite honestly, I got to give you credit because, you know, I think what the Survivor podcasts do for me is I don't know anybody else really that watches the show. And so I don't get to talk about it with anybody. So being able to put this in my ear and listen to you guys talk about it in a way that I wish I was talking about it on a regular basis is helpful. It's nice. It's comforting. And so, like, if I can create that for these other issues for guys, I think would be, you know, special. And that's kind of the goal.
And do you have a launch date on any of this stuff yet?
Yeah, it looks like after the new year. We're starting to record now. Probably put up some, you know, teasers on some shows and some signups and things like that. And then I think after the new year, we'll probably start to launch.
And is there any truth to something that I had heard about one of the best ways to fight depression is to not follow the New York Mets? Is that is there any truth to that?
Yeah, but you also need to not follow the New York Jets.
Yes. Yeah, I think is that a combination? Is that probably
that's part the proper of the problem? Dosage of medication is to not pay attention to. No, I mean, that's not true. Look, the Mets have been great the last couple of years. Right. I mean, what else do you know?
Right.
So, yeah, the Jets are a whole other story.
You know, but in all seriousness, though, that, you know, that my father, and he's no longer with us. I know that, as you know, and most of the listeners know. But, you know, when there would be some of these losses over the years, and I think that he was probably, you know, he was never diagnosed with anything. But I think that if you were going to take a look at, like, you know, some of his habits that he had, I mean, I think that probably that he was he would get depressed at times. And some of these, like, you know, brutal sports losses would just put him into a tailspin where it was really hard to come out of it for a while. Like, he would be for, like, you know, weeks.
It's weird how that works, because at the same time, there's a communal, you know, like, there with the Mets, there's a group called the Seven Line. My friend Darren has a t-shirt company, and he started this amazing community around it. And it provides this comfort and the support of fanship and this common, you know, thing that we all share with the Mets that, is nice, and it actually provides comfort and support and community. And so sports is weird. On one hand, it could stab you in the heart and make you cry and be painful. And on the other hand, provide, you know, community and friendship and all these things too. So it's a, I mean, that's how we met, you know, mm-hmm. through that stuff. So like, it's just weird how that, yeah, how that works.
Yeah. I think that the part where sports can get dangerous, especially for people, you know, that there are the high highs and the low lows, that you can't put all of your stock in a sports team deciding whether you get to be happy or sad, because that right. sports team, there's no guarantees there. Unless you're a Patriots fan.
And you don't. And you don't control. Right? Yeah. You have no control over it whatsoever, which if you're somebody with anxiety, that does not help.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. So, you know, that's, yeah. I mean, sports is a funny thing.
Yeah. And believe me, I've gone through it where, yeah, I feel like I'm a healthier person that, like, you know, I would for years, like living and dying with like fantasy football in terms of you have some control mm-hmm. there, but you're sort of like just like really getting bummed out about, you know, something that you had no control on. Somebody's fumbling and you're losing and you feel bad about yourself. It's like, I didn't even do anything.
No, you got the wrong team for that.
Yeah.
That's absolutely certain. I mean, that's part of it too, right? Like, you know, Kelly Wentworth was on one of your shows recently and she was like complaining about the Seahawks, which I thought was kind of funny. And she's talking to a Jets fan.
Yeah, nobody's happy. Nobody's happy. Exactly. They did have a pretty brutal loss a couple years ago in the Super Bowl. We don't need to talk about that. They had won one the year before. So it's
fine. I was going to say, I'll take it.
All right. Well, Matt, you've been doing such a great job with the Mets blog for so long. What was it? 2003 you started Mets blog?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm a dinosaur.
Way back when, and still going strong. So keep up the good work. Check that out. Metsblog.com and also on Twitter at Matthew Cerrone on Twitter. And then is there anything else that you want people to check out at this point?
No, I mean, I think that's fine. I do kind of sports content commentary at MatthewStrone.com, but, you know, I think that's probably a smaller portion of your audience. So that's cool. I mean, it's no problem. I mean, I'm just appreciative of your community and your show. And it's great. Like I said, I don't know a ton of people that watch and listen and talk at the rate that we do. So being able to listen to that stuff and be a part of what you do is awesome.
Well, I listen to a ton of Mets stuff between like all the WFAN stuff that they put out and, you know, everything that you guys put out with SNY and the Jets blog podcast. I listen to that too. I did enjoy the podcast you guys did after Cespedes re-signed this week.
We're going to start doing more of that. Actually, that I thought was a lot of fun too.
Mostly so Mets is really good. Both the guys on that, very good.
We got a new version of that coming out, which hopefully you'll be on occasionally. We'll be
you want to bore people, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm talking about. I mean, all of my information is just regurgitated from listening to other podcasts. So, you know, I have no original take of my own. I could just recite what I've heard and read on, you know, your different blogs and podcasts. So I don't know necessarily if that's helping anybody, but
again, not too dissimilar from sports media. So there you go.
Yeah. What are the Mets going to trade Bruce or Granderson?
Jay Bruce.
Good. He's a bum. Get him out of here. I feel like that I want Conforto to play every day. Granderson can sit on the bench.
I think they do too. But we'll see.
We'll see. That is, stop messing around with Conforto.
Yep.
Stop it. We need him to just play every day. He's going to be a star.
I agree. Okay. I agree. Batting title.
All right. I'm very excited. And then we'll see what's going on. The Jose Reyes thing to me is still so crazy that, you know, he was gone and now he's back. And of course, you know, there's the whole ugly incident in the middle, but it's just that this is, you know that my dog is named Reyes.
Yes. Yes. I love that.
Yes. Yes. And a couple of years ago, I did not like the man, loved the dog. And now the dog is, you know, dog's still around, you know, not super popular at my house. Always goes to the bathroom on the floor. And the baseball player is doing great.
Yeah. I don't think he goes to the bathroom on the floor. So I think we're all set.
Look.
No, I mean, it's funny. I'm looking forward to, I hope, I mean, it'd be great if the Mets go on to win the season. Like, I like the idea that David Wright and Jose Reyes together will be playing. And by that, I don't mean the survivor contestant and your dog, but the two
equally
players.
Equally as likely, yeah. Though. Yeah.
Oh, come on. See, there you go. Come on. You got to believe, buddy.
Yeah. All right. We'll see. We'll see. Very exciting to see how it all plays out. All right. So, Matt, thanks again. Always a pleasure to talk with you and talk to you again soon. Okay.
Got it. Thanks, man.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Matt Cerrone from MetsBlog.com. Always nice to talk with Matt. I was reading his stuff for so many years before I ever even talked to him. So always a pleasure. And hope you guys enjoyed hearing from him as well. All right, so that's going to do it here for this show. Got another bonus. What, more shows? Yes, more shows coming. Nick Iadanza from Australian Survivor will be my guest on the next bonus podcast here over the weekend, and then we'll get back into it with the Wiggle Room and why Zeke lost coming up at the beginning of next week. If you are doing any of the holiday shopping over the weekend, we always appreciate it when you use our link. So many great deals going on Amazon.com. Check out all the daily deals going on. Go to robhasawebsite.com/Amazon, or for our friends in Canada, it's robhasawebsite.com/Amazon CA. Talk to you guys again soon. Take care. Bye.